The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Welcome in today. This is the passionate radio show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. He's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm Joe Galewski, and thank you for being with us today to reach Dr. Mike today on the phone, 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211. udocs@gmail.com is the webpage. Our guest, 34 past the hour, this is a great guest for Final Four weekend, the differences between a winning and losing performance, the science of winning and losing. So that'll be a 34 past the hour, and Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week will be coming up before the top of the hour. Some of the top medical stories we'll talk about: ADHD is being diagnosed more and more. Extreme sports and somebody 40 and over, is that a smart thing to do? Brain mapping, endorsement for Fish. Fish gets a new endorsement. And is there a connection between meditation and test scores? Some of the top medical stories of the week. Hello, Dr. Mike. We have a guest to start the show today, right?
We do. And I'm glad you're here as well, Joe, because it always makes it more fun. Bridget is in the background, and she gave up her mic temporarily to Dr. Adam Bernstein. Adam is an epidemiologist as well as an internist, but he's made a career of looking at, or started a career anyway, of looking at the effects of meat. And so since there's an important study coming out tomorrow about meat that we'll tell you about next week, in fact, we will post the blog on Monday about it, I thought we should get Adam here and say, what are the effects of meat eating and how often do you have to eat meat to have increased stroke or increased diabetes or increased heart disease, which are all things I've learned are associated with meat eating. Is that right, Adam?
That is right, yes.
So how often do I have to eat it?
Well, thank you for inviting me to join you today. Now, the answer is not entirely clear in terms of how often you need to eat it to see these effects. What I can tell you is that there's been a host of different studies recently that have all seemed to find very consistent results when we look at red meat. And when we look at red meat, we see that it increases the risk of obesity, diabetes, hypertension, heart failure, coronary artery disease, stroke, and premature death.
So eating meat, we were always said avoid red meat, and red meat includes obviously pork, but it's anything that comes from a four-legged animal is red meat. And eating red meat, that includes, you know, all those salamis and bolognese and hamburgers, etc., increases your risk. Does it increase? How much does it increase it in what period of time? So let's just do stroke, since that was one of the things you brought up, or diabetes.
Right. So the risks that we've seen in now the research that I've done has looked at the nurses' health study, the health professional study, these large cohorts of adults who have been followed for 20 or 30 years now, and we're looking at hundreds of thousands of adults in these studies. And generally what we're seeing is that the risk of diabetes or the risk of stroke increases about 20% for every serving per day of red meat. And it seems to be a slightly higher for processed meats, the ones that you identified, such as sausages or bacon or bologna, salami.
You know, 20%. So if I ate red meat five times a week, it would double my risk.
It would, the numbers are hard to say, but yes, it would certainly increase your risk substantially. And what we do find is that there is certainly what appears to be a dose-response relationship. So that means that you start to see an increased risk even with the smallest amounts, and that risk continues to climb the more that you eat. So in our populations, we see that people who eat red meat the least, and this is about once a month or never, seem to have the lowest risk. But then anything greater than that in a dose-response fashion seems to increase your risk.
So increase your risk, but increase it substantially.
Correct. And again, it, what's what I should say the substantial risk. Now, there was a meta-analysis done on diabetes.
Meta-analysis means they take all of the other studies that are published and look at them together.
Correct.
And because we got a real lay audience, this is not a doc audience.
Yep. So what I was referring to was I helped lead a study on the relationship between red meat and diabetes. It was a meta-analysis. We essentially went back, we combed through the literature, we found studies that had looked at red meat and diabetes, and we pooled them together. And we found that there was a 50% increased risk with processed meat and diabetes risk. And 50% risk is a substantial increased risk. And this comes with processed meats, again, hot dogs, bacon, sausages, kielbasa, those types of foods. And the risk was still there with the unprocessed meats, but it was significantly higher with the processed meats. But the general thinking here being is that any type of red meat is going to affect your risk, or is going to increase your risk for developing one of these types of diseases.
Okay, now, so some of this risk we already know is due to saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
That is, that four-legged animals have fat that is saturated and increases.
Yep.
Once you absorb it, it increases your lousy cholesterol.
Yep.
But that looks like it's only about 30 or 40% of the risk. Some
yep.
of the risk is due to the nitrates.
Yep.
That is, in processed meat, they put in nitrates, and so we're told to avoid that. Some of that is related to the way it's prepared, the hydrocarbons that form when you grill it.
Yep.
And we're going to tell you next week on this show what we think the majority of the risk is associated with. And actually, we may be able to tell you how to prevent that. So that's the amazing thing that has come out of this research from the Cleveland Clinic. It's embargoed till tomorrow, which means it comes out in a journal tomorrow on Sunday. So I can't tell you. We will post it on the radio.md website. The story on it on Monday, I hope, gets posted. And it'll be a big story, but it explains a lot of the risk. And what's really important is not only does it explain the risk, but it shows how you can mitigate that risk. That is in a New England Journal study that's coming out at the end of the month, I understand. But it is at least 30 or 40% of the risk from red meat you'll be able to mitigate. Doesn't mean it won't have risk. It will. But we'll be able to make it a little less by changing something pretty easy.
Go ahead. One last point, which to follow up on what you're saying. And the key thing here, then, is for the consumer, then, simply choosing low-fat products, low-fat red meat, does not necessarily mitigate the risk. And as you were suggesting, it appears that there's lots of different reasons that meat increases risk, and the healthy option is not necessarily the low-fat option.
May I ask a question, if that's okay? Doctor, I'm in media, so I think marketing plays a very big role in the choices people make in life, whatever it is. And how does somebody avoid or be discouraged with the sensory pleasures of these food items that is created by advertising and these pretty spiffy commercials, which makes this food pretty appealing?
Well, Adam is pointing at me saying, you take that one. It basically is a learned taste, and you're right, it is something that we see and thus wish. But in fact, every time I've had a piece of red meat, literally a half ounce of red meat in the last, it's now 16 or 17 years since I've had red meat, it makes me sick. So if you avoid it for a period of time, it will make you sick. And the study tomorrow will explain a lot of why it makes you sick and why, in fact, I love salmon now. I get much more watery taste from looking at a salmon steak than anything else, Joe.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Mike, and we'll be back. You, the Owner's Manual radio show with Dr. Michael Roizen here on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
I am a face of influenza.
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 We all are faces of influenza.
I'm a mom, and I'm a face of influenza.
Health officials now recommend everyone 6 months of age and older get immunized against influenza this
and every year.
Vaccination is safe and is the best way to help protect yourself and your family from contracting and spreading the flu.
We all are faces of influenza.
See your healthcare provider about getting immunized. The American Lung Association urges everyone 6 months of age and older, and we mean everyone, to get vaccinated. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza is serious. So are we. Get vaccinated.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Well, the show brought to you weekly by Morning and Night Multivitamins and YouBeauty.com. Thanks for listening. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen. If you're listening to us today in Louisville, Kentucky, or Wichita, Kansas, or Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Syracuse, New York, wish your teams well this weekend in the Final Four, which is Saturday. It's Michigan and Syracuse, Louisville, and Wichita State. The Final Four. Did you see that leg injury to the Louisville player, Mike?
Yeah, I did. I was watching the basketball game live at that time. And what was amazing to me is I couldn't understand, because you couldn't obviously see the injury real well. They cut it out on the TV. They didn't focus on it. But all the players were, you know, were like in pain on the floor. And I did, so it's clear now why they were in pain, because the bone was sticking out through the skin. But
ew, that's disgusting.
It was it was unclear to me why they were in such agony, if you will, watching. And the good news is he got a rod that is a metal device to support that bone, fix it up. He's in. He got a whole bunch of screws. Those screws are not the same screws you use in your hardware store, except they're stainless steel. We'll tip off an alarm at the airports now, and we'll, and of course, cost an awful lot more because they're highly polished, and they come with potential lawsuits. So they're much more expensive. But he got that. He's in, and I saw him on crutches this week. I think it was today, in fact, walking into the hotel.
Right. He's from Atlanta, and he'll be on the bench for Louisville this weekend. So the rod becomes a bone in his leg?
No, the rod doesn't become a bone, but it fixes around the bone, or fixes just alongside the bone. It's a really thick rod, so it's my guess is it's probably a half inch in diameter, solid. And you put screws in the upper and lower part of the bone so that it aligns the bone so the bone can heal and the rod and the bone provide strength in the future.
And rehab, obviously. And he says he wants to play next season. The players on the bench who were near him when he fell on the sideline, they became seeing the bone coming out of the leg, started heaving and got sick physically. Got sick. It's got to be difficult to see, and that's why the media didn't show it.
Those guys shouldn't go to medical school.
Well, right. All right. And most of them probably won't.
I don't think
you have to
worry about that. Yeah.
Right. So, well, that's good for him. So, if your team's playing in the Final Four this weekend, enjoy it, and it's only a game. Speaking of extreme injuries, extreme sports could lead to extreme injuries for anybody over 40. How's that?
Well, this is, you know, there are these insanity games, and there's CrossFit, and there's another game.
P90X.
What?
P90X.
All of these things, you know, they're meant for kids who have a lot of stamina and have a lot of what you might call reserve capacity. And when those of us who haven't kept fit, in my 40s, I had kept fit. I still exercise hard 3 days a week. But I know if I was going to do a P90X right now, I should not do it the way I would have done it when I was 25. And that's especially true for people who haven't kept fit all their life and don't continue to be fit. So you don't jump into this without your doctor's approval. And in fact, doing things at a high cardiovascular rate, you can really get some high cardiovascular injury. So, you know, people die every year from doing extreme sports. Excuse me for something on that. But anyway, people die every week with extreme sports. And so the idea is not to do excessive sports in this way, because you are risking excessive injury. So just like kids under the age of probably puberty should, you know, make sure you are especially careful of them for injuries, and that's true of us old guys too, like you and me, Joe. So golf is a good sport for you.
My daughters both do CrossFit, and they say, Dad, you should do this, because they post pictures of what they're doing in the gym, and it is pretty intense, and my daughters are 34 and 30, but they suggested I should maybe do it. So you don't think it's a good thing for me?
Well, I think it is a good thing if you work gradually to it. That is, you should not do what your daughters do, even your daughters who may not be as fit as your son, but you should not do that right away. You should go back and work into it slower.
And a lot of these programs offer modifications. They have like the most extreme pose and then an easier version. So I'd say also just start out with the easier version.
Does it lure people into these programs Because these things have, and you mentioned the P90X. They have a 30-minute infomercial, and everybody on that infomercial, well, they show before and after, but when they get into the program and weeks into the program, their bodies are just incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, does that give people kind of an accurate representation of course, at the bottom of the screen, they say results vary, obviously, but when people see that, does it give them a false sense of what might happen?
I think so. Even today, so I was doing P90X today. They have these 10-minute versions for people that don't have time to exercise. That's what it says. And the girl in the tape, not even like people that have done it and have lost weight, but the girl has this amazing body. And while I was doing it, it was so hard, but I was like, whatever I have to do to get your body, I will do. Obviously that will never happen because her body is amazing.
Well, my six pack abs are 18 pack here. These exercises, when they advertise them, they're very extreme. I mean, why can't there be just something that's a little more sensible? Everything is take it to the limit and do you know what I'm saying?
Well, there are things that are not that extreme, Joe, and they're called regular exercise programs,
right,
or clubs. Or if you go, you can look at, if you go on sharecare.com, you can look at any of the real age programs that Dr. Oz and I created and Joel Harper created with us, and they're much more reasonable.
Is it necessary to do that extreme amount of exercise, that kind of extreme?
No. It depends why you're doing it, but if you're doing it for your health, the answer is no. So the point I'm bringing up on this is that the minimum exercise for maximum health is a lot different than getting fit. So when you're doing it for your health, it is what we know is 10,000 steps a day. So it is 12,000 better than 10 for getting fit, but not for your health. 30 minutes a week of resistance exercise, and I'm saying it in a specific order. So you want to do resistance exercise after you've done walking. Walking prepares your muscles for resistance as well as for cardio. And then third is cardio, because the resistance prepares it for that. And it is 20 minutes three times a week for cardio. And the last 2 minutes should be as hard as your doc says you can do it. So that's very different than getting very fit or playing in a senior games or something like that, where you can get much more fit or much more conditioned for your sport. And I can tell you what I used to do for squash when I would play competitive squash. It was much more than that, but it wasn't for my health. It was to play competitive squash.
Now, so what you recommend in your programs could get somebody fit just as well as some of these extreme exercise regimens that you see advertised?
No, they don't get you as fit. They get you as healthy.
Healthy, okay. So so you can become just as healthy doing your recommendations as much as you might see on these extreme workouts. Very interesting. Coming up is our guest for the show in this hour. She is the co-author of something called Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing, and what are the differences between a winning and losing performance. Next on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only one in five girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now.
The words you say to her today.
Can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Snowboarding is a popular winter sport. Snowboards look like big skateboards made from fiberglass and plastic. Snowboarders ride their boards much the way surfers do, steering by shifting their body weight. Most can reach speeds up to 40 miles per hour. Twice as many injuries happen to snowboarders as skiers. The most common injuries are to the wrist, usually when snowboarders use their arms to break a fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend this sport for children under age 7. For older children, make sure the snowboard fits the child. An easy way to determine this is to make sure the board stands no higher than the child's nose. Children should always wear helmets and gloves with built-in wrist guards, and they should resist trying advanced stunts or dangerous tricks until they've mastered all the basic snowboarding skills. And for more information on your child's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Tour de Cure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Tour de Cure. Yeah. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week. Before the end of the hour, Ashley Merriman is an attorney. She previously served in the Clinton administration and right now volunteers as a head of a small inner-city tutoring program. We're going to talk about winning and losing. And what are the differences between a winning and losing performance? Why are we able to rise to the top one day and maybe the next day you're not doing so well? Can we, in fact, become better competitors? Maybe identify your own competitive style and work from there. Thank you for coming on the show today, Ashley. A great topic because this is Final Four weekend and the college basketball season ends on the Monday. And only one team will win on Monday night and two teams will win tonight. I'd like to know, you know, winning, everybody wins and everybody, there's a winner and a loser. What do you make of this everybody gets a trophy mentality in today's culture?
Oh, I hate it. and the reason I hate it is because what we're telling kids, and I think it really is especially true for kids, I think bosses are a little more leery to hand out bonuses to everyone regardless of performance, right? But I think we're telling people that failure is so terrible, we have to pretend even the losses are a win. And great competitors, great innovators, need to understand that losing is part of the process. It's okay to lose. It's what did you learn from that experience? How are you going to come back for that? And, you know, it's interesting. The research says that great innovators, great competitors need a sense of agency, a belief that they can set their own vision and trust their opinion on how they're doing and know when to move forward and when to ask for help. And if you're telling kids everybody gets a trophy, think about that in terms of what this really means in that kid's development. The kid who did really well, the kid who did score the soccer goals, they tell me they're really frustrated because they're like, I worked really hard and I did really well and nobody's recognizing that. And the kids who did really badly, they're just as confused. They're saying, I did terribly. Why are you telling me I did so great? And, you know, they're saying, you know, isn't this when you're supposed to offer me help? And instead you're just saying, no, 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 don't trust your opinion of how you did. I'll tell you how you did. And I think that's really destructive. I think we need to tell kids, yeah, we're all going to screw up some days. It's how much did you improve and what are you going to do the next time?
Yeah, I couldn't
agree
more.
That's so much more valuable
than
a trophy.
More. And that's why they put scoreboards on playing fields.
Yes, I have parents who tell me, oh, we don't keep score. I'm like, well, but the kids did.
That's pretty weak. That's pretty weak. Here's Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike?
One of the things that Phil Jackson always said was that Michael Jordan was the toughest competitor between the lines. This question came from a listener when I tweeted fact that the show and the book Top Dog, and by the way, the website is topdogbook.com. When I tweeted that earlier in the week, one of the people wrote in, Michael Jordan was always the toughest competitor, but when he went to baseball, he didn't succeed. What does the book tell us about what he should have done differently?
You know, I've actually thought that exact question, and I think some of it has to do with expectations and, you know, the determination, are you playing to win? I don't know if he was really playing to win in terms of that full commitment to try as hard as he was doing. Or we certainly thought this was just some sort of lark and weren't taking it as seriously. I don't know about him. But I think that all-consuming passion, the even anger sometimes when you're not doing well. You know, last fall, one of the guys who won the Nobel Prize for Medicine, during his press conference where he's explaining to the world why he won the Nobel Prize, he does that a little bit, and then out whipped his high school report card and how he got this bad grade for science and his science teacher told him, you have no future in science. And everybody kind of laughed and went, oh, stupid science teacher. But my reaction was, wow, that fueled him for the next 10, 20, 40 years. So the first thing when he got his Nobel Prize would be, look, I showed everyone I could do it when they told me I was wrong. And I think that passion, that fire, may have sort of been missing in the baseball sabbatical, I think, that Michael Jordan was taking.
I will tell you a story about Michael Jordan and basketball, just since it illustrates it so well, I was told by Phil Jackson, when the Bulls would practice on a off day during the Michael Jordan era, he would put Michael Jordan plus the second team against the rest of the first team and one of the guys who would replace Michael Jordan. And so basically they expected that Michael Jordan's team would lose, but it never lost.
right.
And the only advantage they gave Michael Jordan is he could name the end of the game time, and he would have to name it 5 minutes before the game was over to give the other team a chance. Michael Jordan would never name a quit time unless his team was ahead by a considerable time. So one day he decided that, in fact, he would... the other guys had 3 days off, so it was the first day of the three-day off period. So they said, we're going to play until we win. We will outlast him today. This is the rest of the first team. And after 8 hours, they said, this is getting ridiculous because Michael Jordan. And so they let Michael Jordan win. And that just shows you he would not quit unless he was a winner.
Yeah, and I think you have to do that. I mean, you also have to understand that, you know, there's, you know, a chance that you are going to win. And if you have that chance, that's really empowering. That's motivating. You know, that close race. It doesn't mean a guarantee of a win, but the feeling that you can do it and it's in your grasp changes physiology. And now, I always think of, you know, a football game, especially at a blowout, where the team that's winning, those guys are hopping up and down at the end of the game, right? I mean, they are just raring to go. They have more energy than when they started. The team that's losing, they're breathing hard. They look like they're about to pass out. But they've both been playing the same game, right? So what's going on? It turns out when you have a challenge, when you believe you can do it, doesn't mean it's assured, but you can do it, your blood vessels actually dilate. Your heart rate changes. A researcher at the University of Rochester has found that people in this challenge state can have up to almost 2 liters more blood pumping out of their heart per minute. I mean, this is a huge increase.
Wow, that's incredible.
Their
lungs dilate. The way they process glucose is faster. But when you're in a threat, when you think you're going to lose, your veins actually contract because your body is actually trying to literally stave off the bleeding.
Now, I'm going to bring this back in the second segment to a ping pong game I have every Saturday where I typically lose to a guy who's 18 years older than I am, should never win, always says I got 13 stents, two defibrillators. I mean, he starts the day. I got dandruff, two defibrillators, 13 stents, foot fungus, et cetera, and then he beats me. But anyway, we're going to come back to that in the second segment. But you have a chapter called The Utter Importance of Pillow Fights, and I loved it. Tell me what you mean by that. Tell the listeners what you mean by that.
Well, that actually is based out of research from the University of Montreal's Professor Daniel Paquette. And he says that right now the focus in parenting is all about attachment parenting, nurturing, protecting, comforting children. And that's important, but that's not parents' only job. Parents are also there to encourage kids to explore, to challenge themselves, to do new hard things. And that job doesn't stop when you finally convince the kid to go from that step of crawling to walking across the room. It's pushing them. And in Paquette's research, he's actually found that one of the great ways to train kids to emotionally regulate, to be controlling how they respond in a conflict, is through roughhousing.
We'll be back with Ashley Merriman in a minute. Her book is called Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing, here on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start insures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at greatstartgtl.com. That's greatstartgtl.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to greatstartgtl.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms, then heed the signs.
and it's so familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Torticure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Torticure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. While planning gifts for your children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews this holiday season, don't forget about toy safety. Toys need to match a child's abilities, so always check the manufacturer's age recommendations on the toy first. In general, toy parts should be much larger than the child's mouth to prevent injuries, including choking. To avoid serious eye or ear injuries, steer clear of toys that shoot small objects into the air or make loud noises. The eyes, nose, and other small parts on soft toys and stuffed animals should be securely fastened. If a toy comes with instructions, make sure you read and demonstrate them to the child and make sure she understands the proper way to use the toy. And note, never buy hobby kits such as chemistry sets for any child younger than 12. For more tips on keeping your holidays safe with your children and family, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are Dr. Mike, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galuski.
Dr. Mike's Real Age tip of the week in 5 minutes. Ashley Merriman, co-author of Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. Don't be a loser. Read the book. It's published by 12 Books. And here again, Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
So, Ashley, we were talking about the importance of pillow fights.
Right. So we all know those moments when someone is in a competition and all of a sudden they just lose it. You know, the sort of McEnroe throw the tennis racket and have a
You tantrum. Can't be serious.
Exactly. Well, it. You know, how do you?
I felt
get
like
to
saying
point?
That, by the way, with the Greek bailout when they had this craziness that you can't be serious. They're confiscating the money.
Exactly. So we all have these moments where we have to get up for the competition, but when do we not go overboard? And that turns out, a great way to learn that is when kids are roughhousing. Now, we're not talking about the kids themselves, right? Because we've all heard that. They're all playing, they're all laughing, they're wrestling, having pillow fights, and all of a sudden someone's screaming, right? Mommy, he hit me hard! Right?
Right,
but
right.
But when the parents are in charge, not the kids, but the parents are playing Tickle Monster, or I'm going to get you around the room, the parents are watching the kid be excited, and when they're just about to get, you know, too far, then you stop. I freeze, and I just wait for the kid, and then the kid's sort of watching me and paying attention, and then I tickle again. It's about teaching the kids to pay attention to what's a real threat. When do I need to stand up for myself? Ah, that's just playing. I don't need to worry about that. And Daniel Paquette's work 3 years later found the kids, when the parents were in charge of roughhousing, were doing much better at doing just that, defending themselves, letting things that weren't confrontation pass by, and being more able to regulate their emotions.
So how do you suggest parents can help their kids find balance aside from just pillow fighting and things like that?
Find in terms of that emotional regulation?
Yes.
I think it's also about maybe playing games of chance, you know, crazy eights or sorry, where there's no reflection on a kid's ability. It's just what card they got. So that they get this idea that, hey, kids win, kids lose, it's no big deal, we'll play again later. So they're not so invested in thinking that a win is some sort of statement on who they are, or a loss is some statement on who
now,
they are.
Now, we see that professional athletes, and even in the case of the Rutgers coach, mm-hmm. we see that winning is becoming more important than the game at times.
Right.
I mean, with the steroid usage and the abuse of the players. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
I think that has to do with when the stakes get so high that we see things as a zero-sum game, and that every game is the make or break, and lose perspective, because that's not true, right? I mean, you know, we've got this weekend as the Final Four, but up until then, you've had tons of games to lose and come back. So having focus on this one particular thing as a crisis is a focus then on how the prizes have become too high. We were talking lately about, you know, kids walking out of an SAT exam, right? Normal school is about learning and having friends and relationships and mastering skills. But you walk out of an SAT and nobody says, oh, well, I'm not going into the college I want, but gosh, I made so many friends at the Kaplan Center, and I learned vocabulary. Nobody does that, right? It's I passed, I didn't. And that, I think, is also happening in professional sports, where the bonuses that the coaches are getting are so high, depending on how well they did, right? It was 20 minutes after the team got kicked out of the NCAA that coaches started being announced that they were fired. I mean, it was instantaneous. So I think, especially for that college and the NCAA thing, we've got to say, hey, this is about young men and young women learning and learning skills and learning at school and doing other things besides just that win. I think that's when we really get into trouble.
Now, how do we cut back? In other words, it seems to me that the professional sports always have this. And the risk, obviously, is that you give them a huge enough fine if they do it, or a huge enough problem if they do it. But one of the most interesting things to me was I talked to a physician who's a school doctor at a major university where the guys on the school team would never think of taking drugs because they would get caught. But the guys on the intramural team, 60%, he said, of the intramural players are using enhancing drugs, which seemed to me just incredible.
Well, also some of that has to do with the fact that the more you compete, the more you understand the demands. You know, researchers looked cross-country runners and found that the runners who were, you know, complete novices, they were doing it for physical fitness or because they wanted to and they enjoyed it. The elite were doing it because of what they would get out of it. And those middle people, the ones who were trying to get to elite, they're the ones who were most focused on their competitors, their status, because they were trying to get themselves this winning identity that they didn't have yet. And they didn't have enough experience to sort of put it all in perspective.
And, we're talking with Ashley Merriman, author or co-author with Poe Bronson of Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. You can obviously find it on Amazon or topdogbook.com. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. Thank you, Ashley. Time now for Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week.
And this is Fight Cancer with a Spear. Go ahead. Dig into the season's delicate asparagus spears. There's nothing like in-season produce for flavor and nutrients and price. And behind the scenes, your pancreas and maybe your libido, hey, they are a sex symbol, will thank you. Getting lots of folate, specifically from food, not so much from supplements, protects you from cancer of the pancreas, that small abdominal organ with important functions, including secreting insulin. And just half a cup of asparagus delivers 190 micrograms, more than 25% of your daily needs for folate, not sex. Folate is a member of that B vitamin group, and it's long been touted as a heart helper. Some early research also links 800 micrograms a day of folate to a lower risk of colon, breast, ovarian, and lung cancers when you get it from food. Pancreatic cancer prevention is just the newest member of the Why We Love Asparagus family. Although pancreatic cancer is pretty rare, it's stealthy and nasty. The one-year survival rate, only 25%. Even Steve Jobs, who had a relatively benign form, obviously succumbed to it. So anything you can do to prevent it, especially when it involves something delicious, is welcome. To do asparagus right, toss the woolly ends of succulent stalks away with abandon. Then steam the spares, or, my favorite way, cut them into 2-inch little pieces, marinate them with a little olive oil, extra virgin, of course, with some rosemary, and then put them in an oven on a cookie sheet at 275 degrees for about 45 minutes. Turn them a couple times, and you'll get something that tastes better than French fries. Joe?
Sounds great, Dr. Mike. Hey, stay with us, and thanks for listening. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, right here on Radio MD. Stay well.
Are you tired of getting sick and tired? Are you tired of doctors not knowing what's wrong with you? D-Herbs may have the answer. D-Herbs, number one in herbal remedies. D-Herbs' main goal is to enlighten and properly educate people to the importance of human health and nutrition. D-Herbs, home of the full body cleanse. Everyone needs to cleanse. If you eat meat and dairy products, you need to cleanse. If you're eating processed foods, you need to cleanse. 90% of today's diseases that we suffer from are diet related. Cleansing opens a door to healing and rejuvenation. Whether you need help with a chronic disease, weight loss, or to jumpstart and eliminate fatigue, D-Herbs Full Body Cleanse can help. There's a better way to live and healthier way to live. Experience healing. Visit us at dherbs.com. That's dherbs.com. Or call us at 866-434-3727. That's 866-434-3727.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.